If Leverrier really had had powers by which he could have pointed to an unseen planet, that would have been a finality of knowledge that would be support to a prestige that could never be overthrown. Suppose a church had ever been established upon foundations not composed of the stuff of lies and frauds and latent laughter. Let the churchman stand upon other than gibberish and mummery, and there'd be nothing by which to laugh away his despotisms. Say that, whether it be a notion of organic control, or not, we accept any theory of growth, or development, or evolution. Then we accept that the solemnest of our existence's phenomena are of a wobbling tissue rocks of ages that are only hardened muds, or that a lie is the heart of everything sacred. Because otherwise there could not be growth, or development, or evolution. 21. A trek of circumstances that kicks up a dust of details, a vast and dirty movement that is powdered with particulars. The gossip of men and women, and the yells of brats whether dinner is ever going to be ready, or not, young couples in their nightly sneaks, and what the hell has become of the grease for the wheels, who's got a match? It's a wagon train that feels out across a prairie. A drink of water, a chaw of tobacco, just where to borrow a cupful of flour, and yet, even though at its time any of these wants comes first, there is something behind all. The hope for Californian gold. The wagon train feels out across the prairie. It traces a path that other wagon trains make more distinct, and then so rolls a movement that to this day can be seen the ruts of its wheels. But behind the visions of gold, and the imagined feel of nuggets, there is something else. The gold plays out. A dominant motive turns to something else. Now a social growth feels out. Its material of people, who otherwise would have been stationary, has been moved to the west. The first, faint structures in an embryonic organism are of cartilage. They are replaced by bone. The paths across prairies turn to lines of steel. Or that once upon a time, purposefully, to stimulate future developments, gold was strewn in California, and that there had been control upon the depositions, so that only enough to stimulate a development, and not enough to destroy a financial system, had been strewn. That in other parts of this earth, in far back times, there had been purposeful plantings of the little, yellow slugs that would, when their time should come, bring about other extensions of social growths. But the word purposeful, and the word providential, are usurped words. They are of the language of theologians, and are meant to express an idea of a presiding being, ruling existence, superior to it, and not of it, or not implicit to it. I'd rather go on using these words, denying their ownership by any special cult, than to coin new words. With no necessity for thinking of an external designer and controller, I can think of design and control and providence and purpose and preparation for future uses, if I can think not loosely of nature, but of a nature, as an organic whole. Every being, except for its dependence upon environment, is God to its parts. It is upon the northern parts of this earth that the civilizations that have persisted have grown up, then extending themselves colonially southward. History, like South America and Africa, tapers southward. There are no ruins of temples, pyramids, obelisks, in Australia, Argentina, South Africa. Preponderantly peninsulas, are southward droops. As if by design, or as if concordantly with an accentuation of lands and peoples in the north, the sun shines about a week longer in the north, each year, than in the south. The coldness in the less important Antarctic regions is more intense than in the Arctic, and here there is no vegetation like the grasses and flowers of the Arctic, in the summertime. Life withers southward. Musk oxen, bears, wolves, foxes, lemmings in the far north, but there are only amphibious mammals in the Antarctic. Fields of Arctic poppies in the Arctic summertime, but summer in the Antarctic is gray with straggling lichens. If this earth be top-shaped as some of the geodesists think, it is a bloom that is stemmed with desolation. There are no deposits of coal in the southern parts that compare with deposits in the northern parts. The greatest abundance of oil supplies is north of the equator. It looks like organic preparation, in formative times, before human life appeared upon this earth, for civilizations that would grow up in the north. For ages, peoples of this earth were ignorant of the uses of coal and oil, upon which their later developments would depend. But so conventionalized are the thoughts of most persons, upon this subject, that if, for instance, my expression is that gold was strewn in California in preparation for future uses, there must be either a visualization of an aggrandized man, who walked about, slinging nuggets, or a denial that, except in the mind of a man, there can be purpose, or control, or design, or providence. But the making of a lung in an embryonic being that cannot breathe but it will breathe. This making of a lung is a preparation for future uses. Or the depositions of tissues that are muscles that are not, but that will be, used. Mechanical foresight, or preparation for future uses, pervades every embryonic being. There is a fortune teller in every womb. Still, not altogether only theological have been speculations upon the existence of purpose, or design, control, or guidance in nature. There are philosophical doctrines known as orthogenesis and entelechy. Again we are in a situation that we have noted. If there be orthogenesis, or guidance from within what? Heretofore, this doctrine has provided no outlines within which to think. All that is required for thinkableness, instead of bafflement, is to give up attempted notions upon nature as universality and conceive of one thinkable-sized existence, of shape that is representable in thought, and conceive of an organic orthogenesis within that. In the organic sense, there is, in the Arctic regions, no great need for water. Though the coldness is not so intense here as it is commonly supposed to be, the climate nevertheless prevents much colonization. I have never read of a deluge in the Arctic. Thunderstorms are very uncommon. Some explorers have never seen a thunderstorm in the Arctic regions. And at the same time there are oppressively warm, or almost tropical, summer days in the Arctic. Instead of the enormous falls of snow, of common suppositions, the fall of snow, in the far north, is very light, Stephenson. It looks like organically economic neglect of a part that cannot be used. Where, as reliefs, thunderstorms are not needed, there are, except as vagaries, no thunderstorms, though the summertime conditions in places of need and no need are much alike. See Heilprin's account of his experiences in Greenland summer days so nearly tropical that pitch melted from the seams of his ship. The alternations that are known as the seasons are beneficial. They have come about accidentally, or they have been worked out by automatic design, or by all-pervasive intelligence, or by equilibration, if that word be preferred to the word intelligence. It looks as if more complexly a problem was solved. It is commonly thought that only brains solve problems, or, rather, approximate to solutions, but every living thing that carries a weapon, or a tool, has, presumably not with its brains, but with the intelligence that pervades all substances so then with the intelligence of its body solved a problem. It looks as if more complexly a problem was solved, as I say, though in anything like a real, or final, sense, no problem ever has been solved. By the varying incidents of the sun, alternations of fruitfulness and rest could be brought about in the north and the south, but that left rhythm small in the tropics. It looks as if here, intelligently, were brought about the changes that are known as the dry season and the rainy season. I have never read a satisfactory explanation of this alternation, in conventional, meteorological terms. In the April rains there is evidence, or might be, if we could have a rational idea as to what we mean by evidence, of design and an automatically intelligent provision and control. Something is controlling the motions of the planets, according to all appearances that we take as appearances of control. Accepting this, I am only amplifying. Rains, of a gentle and frequent kind that is most beneficial to young plants, or best adapted to them, fall in April. Conventional biology is too one-sided. It treats of adaptation of plants to rain. We see also the adaptation of rains to plants. But there must be either the conventionally theological, or the organic, view, to see this reciprocity. If one prefers to think of a kind and loving deity, who is sending the April rains, he will have to consider or, rather, will be faced by records of other rains, which are of the loving kindness of slaughter and desolation and woe. There is some unknown condition that ameliorates the climate of Great Britain, as if the center of colony sporing were prepared for by an automatic purposefulness, and protected from the rigors of the same latitudes in the west. Once upon a time, one of the wise men's most definite concepts was the Gulf Stream. They wrote about its absolute demarcation from surrounding waters. They were as sure of the Gulf Stream as they are today that the stars are trillions of miles away. Lately, so much has been written upon the inconceivability of the Gulf Stream having effect upon climate farther from its source than somewhere around Cape Hatteras, that I shall not go into that subject. Something is especially warming Great Britain, and it cannot be thought to be the Gulf Stream. It may be an organically providential amelioration. It may play out when the functioning period of Great Britain passes away. I am not much given to prophecy, but I'll take this chance that if England loses India, we may expect hard winters in England.